Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, February 8th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Timonini. As we mentioned yesterday, I am on my own today because I saw A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder at the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts in Orlando last night. I know that you are all waiting with bated breath for my review of a show that debuted on Broadway 3.5 years ago, but I'm going to save that for the end of the episode because we've got some big stuff to talk about today. First and foremost is the oft-rumored nugget that James teased on yesterday's episode. We started hearing rumblings on Sunday, and as the message board started picking it up, it had become topic numero uno amongst the theatrical insiders that Charles Isherwood is no longer employed by the New York Times. As confirmed quite unceremoniously by Isherwood's former colleague Michael Paulson, The Gray Lady has parted ways with its former number two theater critic. Paulson simply tweeted stating that the rumors were in fact true and that the Times was now accepting applications for a replacement. He also did everyone the favor of screenshotting the job description just in case you want to polish up your resume and send it over to the Times. Later in the day, the paper's spokeswoman Eileen Murphy confirmed the move but refused to give any further details, as did Isherwood for his half. He had been at the Times since 2004, since coming over from Variety. On numerous occasions, we have discussed how the Times' financial difficulties are impacting their arts coverage in and around New York City, so one's mind immediately jumps to some budgetary reason for the critic's departure. However, in hiring a full-time replacement, getting rid of Isherwood likely will not result in major savings. According to Grant Glickson, the president of the News Good of New York and a staff assistant and the head of the bargaining unit at the Times, the position's minimum salary is $2,075 per week, or $107,900 annually. Isherwood is rumored to have been making roughly double that, and while $100K is no small chunk of change, I'll be happy to accept it. Just email me and I'll make sure I get you the address. But in the grand scheme of the New York Times' balance sheet, that's a drop in the bucket. So it's unclear if saving $100,000 was the reason that he is no longer there, or maybe he departed to explore other options. I'm sure we'll get some details eventually, but it might not be immediately. Speaking from my place in straight white male privilege, I do hope that the Times takes this opportunity to bring a more diverse voice into the paper of record's theatrical conversation, be it by race, gender, sexual orientation, handicap, age, or some or all of the above. Do you have suggestions on whose critical voice you would like to hear as Ben Brantley's new sidekick? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. Into some show and casting news yesterday, Daryl Roth, Elizabeth Ireland McCann, and Cody Lassen, the producers of the Broadway show Indecent, announced that the entire off-Broadway cast of the show will be transferring with it to Broadway. In fact, the Broadway cast has been performing the play together for more than 2 years during its development at the Sundance Theater Institute and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, followed by productions at Yale Rep, La Jolla Playhouse, and off-Broadway at the Vineyard Theater. Indecent is a new play with music written by Paula Vogel, who co-conceived it with Rebecca Teichman, who is the show's director. Returning from the various runs of the show will be Katrina Link, Mimi Lieber, Max Gordon Moore, Tom Nellis, Stephen Ratazzi, Richard Topple, and Adina Versen. Joining the Broadway company will be Ben Cherry, Eleanor Risa, and Andrea Goss. Now, Miss Goss, you might recognize that name a little bit. We'll get back to her in just a second. Indecent will begin Broadway performances at the Court Theater on April 4th, with an official opening scheduled for April 18th. Now, speaking of Andrea Goss, you might recognize her name as a well-loved and well-received understudy and ensemble member of the most recent Broadway revival of Cabaret. Well, she then went on the national tour with the show, playing Sally Bowles. Well, so since she is going to be joining the Broadway cast of Indecent, the Cabaret tour needs to find a new Sally Bowles. And they have in Leanne Larkin, who played Dainty June in the most recent Broadway revival of Gypsy back in 2008 with Patti LuPone, Boyd Gaines, Laura Benanti et al. She began performances yesterday on the road with the show, while John Peterson, who's been in the show on Broadway, as well as numerous West End credits, he will be taking over the role of the MC on February 21st. Speaking of touring news and something that should not be surprising to anybody at all, the already announced On Your Feet national tour will begin in Miami, Florida. Not a surprise there. The musical will play the Adrian Arsht Center for the Performing Arts from October 5th through 15th of this fall. Then it will venture to other stops, including here in Orlando. This fall also marks the international premiere of On Your Feet, where production will begin on October 18th in the Netherlands. No casting has been announced for the tour, but I've got my fingers crossed, since the show is coming down here to Orlando, that a certain Broadway leading lady will decide to hit the road with the show as well. In other casting news, Yesterday Primary Stages announced the complete casting for the final production of their 2016-2017 season, the New York premiere of Daniel's Husband. Written by Michael McKeever and directed by Joe Brancato, the cast includes Anna Holbrook, Lou Liberator, Matthew Montalongo, Ryan Spahn, and Leland Wheeler. In Daniel's Husband, we see Daniel and Mitchell enjoying life as the perfect couple. Perfect house, perfect friends, even a mother who wants them to wed. What isn't perfect is that Daniel longs to be married and Mitchell does not. Daniel's Husband begins performances on Wednesday, March 22nd at the Cherry Lane Theater with an opening night set for April 4th, and the limited run is scheduled to wrap up on Friday, April 28th. Seems quite fitting, after yesterday we discussed MCC's miscast and all of the fantastic stars going to be joining that. Yesterday, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS announced the performers, or at least most of them, for their upcoming Broadway Backwards. Broadway Backwards is a show celebrating equality and community through gender-reversed interpretations of beloved show tunes. This year, the show will happen on Monday, March 13th, and will benefit Broadway Cares and the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center in New York City. The stars that have already been announced are fantastic, and I can't wait for these videos and to see what they're going to perform. So far on the bill are Sierra Bagus, Alex Brightman, Titus Burgess, Lynn Cariou, Ariana DeBose, Laura Lee Gaynor, John Glover, Jay Armstrong Johnson, Rachel Bay Jones, Levi Christ, Andrew Keenan Bolger, Javier Munoz, Bobby Steger, Andrew Reynolds, Bobby Conte Thornton, Kathleen Turner, and Rachel York. There are going to be more announced, but I don't know how you top that. That is fantastic. As I said, the show will be on March 13th, and it'll come from the Al Hirschfeld Theater, where Kinky Boots is currently playing. All of the $85 tickets on that level are sold out, but they do have remaining $175 tickets, so you can pick those up at BroadwayCares.org. So now, as we start to see shows open, tomorrow Sunset Boulevard will officially open on Broadway. We have to start thinking about the Tony Awards. However, despite his great run last year, it is looking less and less likely that James Corden will return as the award show's host this year. In an interview with New York Magazine's Vulture.com, Corden talked about his upcoming gig hosting the Grammys, which he's doing for the first time, replacing the perennial host LL Cool J, who seems to have been hosting that show since long before his mother told him to knock somebody out. Anyway, the Grammys are on February 12th. We'll talk about those a little bit more in the future. But in the interview, Corden talks about co-starring in the Ocean's 11 female-centric reboot, Ocean's 8, starring Sandra Bullock. He also talks about balancing politics with the show, carpool karaoke, and that he's not really sure that he's going to be doing the Tonys this year. He was non-committal, but I think based on that, he's waffling much closer to the 25% than the 50% about whether or not he'll be returning. Obviously, the most natural replacement would be the man who hosts the show that leads into Corden's Late Late Show, and that is Stephen Colbert. While he does not have the Broadway resume or the Tony Award that Corden does, Colbert is a lover of musical theater, and he has done some things around musical theater, including that star-studded concert production of Company led by another former Tony host, NPH. Much like the Times Critic position, I would love to see someone other than a white man host it, but if it's not going to be Corden or Colbert, I wouldn't mind seeing Nick Kroll or John Mulaney host it. I think that would be an interesting choice considering they had a really successful run of Oh Hello on Broadway. And they have just enough pop culture relevance to potentially pass CBS's Q score test. Let me know who you think would be a better host. I wouldn't mind seeing, here's a thought, maybe the Broadway-related cast members from Madam Secretary. That show has oodles and oodles of Broadway talent on it. Wouldn't mind seeing a Patina Miller, B.B. Newworth, Sebastian Arcellus, Eric Bergen, Keith Carradine, Tim Daly, and more. That could be an interesting option. But let me know who you think on Twitter at BWWMatt. Now, speaking of the Grammys, we learned that John Legend, who's one of the co-stars of the movie musical La La Land, and is currently making his Broadway debut of sorts as a producer for the Broadway production of Jitney, along with beloved Tony winner Cynthia Erivo, will be singing the Beach Boys song God Only Knows for the In Memoriam section at the Grammys this weekend. It'll apparently be an interesting piano arrangement. I love both Cynthia Erivo and John Legend, go Bucks, but I tend to dislike it when these things become about the people performing the song rather than the performers who have passed away who this section is intended to remember. However, I trust those two to do something respectful and classy and artistically sound. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they pull off on February 12th, this Sunday, on CBS. Now, before I get into my review of Gentleman's Guide, there are a couple videos that I want to recommend for you. The first is from Broadway legend Lea Salonga. She recently performed with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra at the Sydney Opera House. And there's video of a song that I did not expect to be in her repertoire, even though I probably should have, because anything Lea Salonga sings is going to be amazing. But that is the song Burn from Hamilton. Lea Salonga is amazing, and I love everything she does, but to see her pour her heart out into this song is really, really, truly fascinating, and it makes me wish that she'd been in this show. Who knows, maybe she will at some point, but she is just otherworldly talented, so check that out. Now that music you hear underneath me, that's the other thing I wanted to recommend. Jake Gyllenhaal posted a really cool video on his Facebook page that shows him walking behind the backstage of the newly renovated Hudson Theater down to the stage itself, singing Finishing the Hat from Sunday in the Park with George. He won't be up for a Tony Award, but this video does prove that he's up for the challenge of this really intense Sondheim role. I have to admit, despite hearing all the fantastic reviews from the concert last year, I still had apprehensions because if you listen to Some Like It Pop, you know that this is one of my top three favorite shows, and I am a Mandy Patinkin devotee, but color me impressed. Gyllenhaal does a really nice job with this song. What he does is he starts up, and I think the catwalk, walks down the stairways, the camera follows him, and he ends up on stage with the all-white male orchestra and finishes the song from there. In addition to hearing Jake sing really impressively, if I might say so myself, we also get to see a bit of the Hudson Theater, since very few of us have ever seen the Hudson Theater inside, at least in its current incarnation. It's cool to see what the theater looks like. It looks very intimate. The mezzanine and the balcony look to be very close, so it seems like it will be a very intimate house, especially for a show like this. Alright, I'm going to shut up for a second and let you listen, and then we'll come back and talk about Gentleman's Guide.
What you feel when voices that come through the window go until they distance and die, until there's nothing but sky, and how you're always turning back to lay from the grass or the stick or the dog or the light, how the kind of woman willing to wait's not the kind that you want to find waiting to return you to the night, dizzy from the height, coming from the hat. Studying the hat, entering the world of the hat, reaching to the world of the hat.
Okay, I admit it, I was a little apprehensive heading into the Gentleman's Guide for Love and Murder tour stop here in Orlando yesterday, because even though I know a lot of people who have raved about the show and who have loved it, what I knew of the music didn't really get me super excited. I obviously knew I've Decided to Marry You because of the fantastic Tony Awards performance, and I also knew the conceit that one actor played all of the dice with family because of Jefferson Mays' quick change introduction on the Tonys, and of course heard a lot about it throughout the years. However, I went in cautiously optimistic because so many people talked about how funny it was. And they were right. I was thoroughly impressed, and the cast album did not do justice to just how entertaining this show is. In that way, I kind of compared a little bit to She Loves Me. I knew the cast recording for She Loves Me before I ever saw the show 7-8 years ago. But when you see She Loves Me, the show is just so fun and vibrant and lovely that you can't really always get that on the cast recording. And that's before this most recent Laura Benanti version of She Loves Me, where she really amped up the humor even more. So, the Gentleman's Guide tour is in great shape. It is ending up its year and a half run. It kicked off in September of 2015. But after it leaves here in Orlando, it'll go north to Buffalo, where it'll play from the 16th through the 22nd. Then it'll go across the country to Costa Mesa from the 28th through the 5th of March. And then it'll end in Sacramento from the 7th through the 12th. If you are in Central Florida, if you are in upstate New York, or if you are over on the left coast, go see the show before you don't have the opportunity to anymore. It's really special. It's really unique. I heard elements of My Fair Lady in there, heard elements of maybe even a little night music, Gilbert and Sullivan, the old British music hall type of things, like the Mystery of Edwin Drood, But really, it's tough to compare it to anything. It is its own thing. It is witty. It is clever. The lyrics are incredibly dense, so you have to really lean in and focus on listening and understanding. And when you do, you are often, often rewarded. One thing that I really appreciated about it was that it didn't beat you over the head with jokes like many musical comedies do. It was subtle. Rather than throwing everything at the audience, it invited the audience to come to them, and I really, really enjoyed that. The performances are fantastic, and with the exception of one principal, the entire cast has been with the tour since it launched in September of 2015. Kevin Massey, who is part of the Broadway company as well, plays Monty Navarro. He is fantastic, a great leading man, both innocent and mischievous as well. John Rapson plays the Dicequith family, and while I don't know that he had kind of the goofy silliness of Jefferson Mays, he was incredibly good in all of the different roles. In fact, so much so, when he came out for the curtain call and they flashed the portraits of all the characters he played on the back, the two women sitting behind me honestly didn't know that that was him. They were dumbfounded when they realized that one actor had played the entire Dicequith family. Kristen Beth Williams as Sabella is wonderful and coquettish and charming. Kristen Hahn plays Phoebe, and she is delightful as well. In fact, looking at her with the wig and everything, she looked a little bit like a young Bellamy Young from Scandal, but she also was in The Life on Broadway. The entire cast is fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it far more than I anticipated doing. So, if you're in Orlando, Buffalo, Costa Mesa, Sacramento, go see Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. You won't regret it. Okay, that's all I have for you today. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @Broadway Radio. James wasn't here today, but he will be back, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.